welcome to Bagel Tech Big, the weekend show about technology from the Bagel Tech Network. And wouldn't you know it, Sarah's connection's just dropped out the very second I started recording the video. Bugger. Sod's law, though, eh? Never mind, we'll soldier on with that. She's on a crappy Wi-Fi connection from San Francisco. Apparently, she's on Comcast, Eric, so...
That would explain it.
There you go. That's the whole thing. The week in technology discussed by us, and after a long, long absence, very welcome return to Mr. James Hart. Hello, mate.
Good evening, Ewan. Good evening, listener. And good evening, chat room.
Where the bloody hell have you been, boy?
To be honest with you, Friday night is the only night I can really sort of stay up late out in London. So if there's a social engagement, either a leaving party or a social function, I have to go to that and neglect you, I'm afraid, sir. But this evening and for the foreseeable future, I'm afraid you're stuck with me.
I've been neglected by better people than you, mate. Fear not.
Good.
I've been hit by a few as well. Next to him, for the first time on the network, a fantastic welcome from the Bro Show, Terry Lucy.
Hello, how's it going?
It's all right, mate. We've had your brother on.
Well, my pretend brother, yeah.
Mike Early. You two look like, well, I haven't watched Twitter, mate. You two look like you joined at the hip.
Oh, we are. I love him. He's a nice guy.
Oh, and that's sweet.
Even though he's not watching. I watched when he came on. He's not watching tonight. He's at the cinema.
No, hasn't he got girlfriend issues on Friday night?
Oh, yeah, he's got commitments.
Oh, dear, dear, dear. That'll never do. Bless him. That gets in the way of your tech, mate. Below Terry, we've got Sarah, but she's not here, so we'll have to replace her with the stand-in Tiger Woods bobblehead doll that we saved up last week for let's put him in, for Mr. Cringely, who was late. Sarah's not late; she just isn't here anymore. There we go. And last but by no means least, Eric Lanigan.
Hey guys,
how you doing, mate?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. How was Tech Talk back last night?
It went pretty well. Everyone wanted to talk about the Skype Microsoft acquisition. And then by the time we got to Google I.O., we ran out of time. So I might actually pick it up even more next week, because there's just a lot that happened this week with Google and Microsoft.
I think really that without those three stories, there'd have been absolutely bugger all to talk about, wouldn't there?
Pretty much. Now, what's the third?
Well, there was a big one over here in the UK about Ofcom have said that they don't think that 4G is going to solve the data issues, and they think people are looking at it towards Nirvana as well, which could be a bit of an issue. And then after that, it's really just Google and Microsoft. I think that's the whole thing. So Microsoft have bought Skype. Now, there's been a lot of Twitter comments flying around about slagging off Microsoft and slagging off Skype as well for jumping over to them. But what's the take on this? Is it a good thing, a bad thing, a necessity? What have we got?
It's difficult, I think. It's difficult to make a clear... Everybody's slating Microsoft straight away, didn't they? But I think, hang about, let's give them a little bit of time and see what they do. I think everyone's been really quick to say, oh, they paid too much. Oh, it was so expensive. And yes, it was expensive, but I think some good stuff could come of it, especially with they're going to integrate it across all their services, like with the gaming, Windows Phone 7. I think some good could come of it. I don't know if it's 8.5 billion good, but I think some good will come of it.
Well, I mean, that's the thing with the pricing, because didn't the pricing, wasn't it sold for 5 billion? And then it was resold for $3 billion back to the original owner, and now he's flogged it on for 8.5. I mean, that's a good markup.
I'll say.
I'll take that. That would get me a new Skype connection or a new video. So, is it overpriced?
Yeah, absolutely.
No hesitations.
If they've made the right decision, sorry.
Go ahead, James.
If they've made the right decision, and because I think when eBay tried to buy them, they made the mistake of buying the company but not the technology, I think. And it all got a little bit messy, but I think Microsoft would probably have learned from that error. I'm still not sure it's entirely worth it, though, because it's a proprietary voice over IP communication system. So it is a complete ecosystem in itself. I've never seen any kind of extensibility to it. Or you've got Google Voice... You've got millions of different small SIP kind of companies being set up, but Skype stands alone. Okay, so it's got a massive user base. But even then, how is that user base going to be converted to Microsoft dollars in that way? I've been struggling to find out how it's going to think to myself how it's going to work.
Are they looking for a return on investment, though?
Well, you don't spend money without.
Well, I know. You buy something because of the fact you want to break it up and sell it. You buy something because of the fact it adds value to your current service. Or you buy something and it's just the right thing to do to make your product static, solid, more desirable. You know, there's lots of reasons you'd buy a company, but you can't be saying that, you know, if you want a return on investment here in 3 years, which is the standard principle that you'd work on, you ain't going to get 8.5 billion back in 3 years on integrating Skype.
Not if you're integrating it into your phone operating system, which comes kind of free.
Yeah.
So here's the weird thing, right? So $8.5 billion, huge amount of money. When people saw this, they said, first of all, Microsoft didn't need any of that technology because they've had services like this for years. They already have robust systems of doing this. They've got the software. They've got, in many cases, the server. It's already built into the Xbox. I mean, basically everything Microsoft makes, except for possibly Windows Phone, can already do the things that Skype does. It just isn't called Skype. It's called Microsoft something. It's called Windows Live something or Xbox Live something or Microsoft Link something, you know, wherever they've got it broken up and called different things. And it's this dispersed portfolio of VoIP and video services. And so that's the first alarm bell is, why would they pay that much when they don't even need the actual underlying technology? They're just buying the brand. Well, Microsoft historically doesn't continue to develop and strengthen existing brands. Sorry, what?
That's an expensive brand.
I'll say, yeah. So I think what happened, though, if you listen to the press conference, Ballmer says how Skype was on the road to an IPO. And they didn't want to see that. They wanted to do a partnership with Skype. They wanted to sell some ads through Skype, and they wanted to bring Skype into some of their products, but they didn't want to compete with a publicly funded Skype. And while he didn't say that was exclusively the reason, he did mention it, and I would put a lot of it. I think that's a pretty big deal that he would say that, because I think that makes a lot of sense of why they would do this. So the next question is, if they bought Skype so that they could own that market and not compete with Skype, the next question is, why does Microsoft suddenly want to get into the business of serving, as Ballmer said, billions and billions of people with a global multi-platform, multi-device communication service?
See, I mean, that makes it sound like this has been bought by Ballmer out of petulance. I'm not playing with you. I'm not doing that. So I'll just buy your entire company. And then you'll do what I want.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's the weird thing. It would make sense if it was really just buying their competitor, but Microsoft had never competed in this market before. They've never tried to be a global multi-platform, you know, on Mac, on Linux, on Android, on iOS. They've never tried to be a communications server like this.
Is that where the danger lies, though?
Because
apart from links.
Now, are you familiar with Link? Because I'd never heard of that before this announcement.
Yeah, I use it at work.
And what is it?
I mean, it links Messenger and all sorts of some parts of Office together so that you have VoiceOver and messaging all in one place.
It's a live system throughout your network, isn't it? So you'll see people online, like in a telephone directory, an online telephone directory, and you can dial them with a headset on, and it's a VoIP system, integrated VoIP system.
Yeah, I mean, this is because of that is one of the reasons why I was a bit surprised. I don't think they've necessarily bought it for the technology. It's for the user base.
But exactly. But the thing with Links is it actually works.
It
functions brilliantly, and you can do desktop sharing, you can do PowerPoint presentation sharing in real time, and it's slick as snot. So in terms of technology and the crap that you have to put up with Skype as a user, Microsoft are ahead.
Wait, I'm confused. So I thought Microsoft Link was a business only thing that had to be hosted by a business with a Microsoft Link server.
That's right.
Are you guys using it at home?
That's true.
No, that's right.
No,
that's true.
No. No, I use it at work. We've got several Link servers. In fact, we're actually starting to use it across different councils now as well. Previously, so you when we were testing it, with two other local councils, shall I say.
So you
It'll
and
be
where do you use
to see
it?
What happens with that now?
Well, this is the thing, is that Link is Snickers snot. It really, really functions. It's got better functionality and far more stability than Skype has got. So when I first saw that Microsoft was buying Skype, I thought this is going to add stability to the Skype platform, because Microsoft have already got the size behind them, and they've also got the technology, and the technology functions better than Skype does. So you're then saying, right, you're buying 700 million users. Thank you, chat room. But at 700 million users, I'm not sure that's still, even so, I don't think that's worth 8.5 billion. I mean, I know you're going about Facebook, you know, Facebook's 50 billion and that kind of stuff. I don't think anyone would buy Facebook even with half a billion users in it. You know, I'm perplexed as to why Microsoft have done this, because to be honest, they've got their own user base. If you look at the prevalence of Windows across the planet, you look at the technology that they're currently carrying for the business market as being extremely good. Why on earth do they need Skype?
Has anybody actually asked them?
Wait there, I'll give them a ring.
Well, that'd be too obvious, James, for God's sake. Come on, man.
I mean, that's a really strange thing, isn't it? Microsoft makes these announcements, and I don't know whether there's a press conference as a result of it. But everybody reacts as we have done, asking the questions. But obviously, Microsoft, I don't know how companies work in this respect. Obviously, these deals like this have months of preparation behind them. And they don't go into them just saying, one afternoon, what should we do? I know, we'll buy a massive, if slightly flawed, communication system.
that's the point. They haven't done it yet. I mean, they're announcing that they're going to do it. These things will take, it's a year probably before they buy it. There's going to be data rooms set up. They're going to analyse the liabilities of the company and all that kind of stuff. 8.5 may be the gambit for we're going to buy them, and this could be 6.5 within a few months.
Someone could come in and say, no, we'll have it.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, that's always the case. I mean, this is definitely a buyer beware market, isn't it?
Good Lord.
Also, I think it has a lot to do with selling ads and doing things that we didn't expect Microsoft to do in terms of social. If you listen to the Skype CEO talking at the press conference, I've got a clip actually right here where he talks about a feature of Skype that I had never thought of before and never thought of Skype as a very more intimate social network. But listen to how he phrases this. I thought it, has some insight.
Skype really is that inner circle. It's that inner social experience. Most people that use Skype have a very select set of friends or business associates, the 8 to 10 folks they talk to every day. That is really the intersection that we see. So Skype's focused on mobile, it's focused on video, it's core communication service, and then how that intersects with social is really, really exciting for us.
I mean, that's very true, because if you look at the BagelTech network in itself, that's exactly what we do. We've got 12 to 15 people that regularly come on the shows or rotate through the shows. And I've got maybe another 10 family, and that's the whole lot. It is a circle of limited people. I think that's a good point. How does that make it worth 8.5 billion?
I don't know, because having acknowledged that, I don't know how they intend to sell video ads through Skype and have people continue to like Skype the way that they currently do.
Skype is actually quite an amazing product, because if you said about your product is all based around customer service and provision of service to customers, Skype does that pretty badly. I mean, everyone slags off Skype. It's popular to slag off Skype. Yes, we run a video wall off it each week, and yes, we don't lose a lot of connections, Sarah. But you might want to switch your video off, Mrs. That's probably causing the problem. Essentially, it's not the slick service. It's not the best service going around the place. But people have it's almost like it's a sick dog. People love it because it's sick. No, I don't know.
Well, I think it rose to popularity because it was the first truly multi-platform software that could do this kind of live voice and video chat that also works pretty well, considering. I mean, you've got broadcast networks using Skype for major news shows that are live nationally.
I mean, that's the question. Are they buying it for the codecs? Are they buying it? Are they
No. No, I don't think so at all. Microsoft, I think, has actually better codecs.
Right.
Like I say, Lynx is significantly better in terms of stability and function.
but I'm confused. So, Ewan, where do you use Lynx, though? I'm confused.
I've got a company that that want me to have a laptop, and I use the laptop to upload stuff to servers and that kind of stuff and take stuff down that they send to me. It's all because their whole corporate storage system is behind an intranet.
It's voice or it's video chat or how does it differ from Skype? I'm curious. Because I went to their page and they do a terrible job explaining it on their webpage.
Effectively it is Skype. It dials up other users that you can see online. So when you come on when you do your control alt delete and you get your login, that login name pops up in a user database and you can search through it and you can dial through it. You've got a headset microphone that comes in via an analog collection, or you can do a USB connection, and you can do video over webcam if you've got it. But this company hasn't got webcams on their laptops; they take them out. But you can, if you've got a PowerPoint presentation, I can sit and watch full screen a PowerPoint presentation being manipulated with audio. It interfaces with what's the name of that? The video conferencing thing with the audio with the, you know, with the triangle, the tricorn,
what
user interface, the Polycom. It'll interface with a Polycom unit as well through audio in, audio out. So you can do multiple conferencing in one room with one remote user who can still see everything that's going on the screen in front of them. I mean, it really works. It really functions.
And it cuts down massively on phone bills.
Oh, hugely. Yeah, I mean, you get companies that basically, if I go and see this firm, you'll regularly see someone sitting with the headset on and they're talking to another person. They won't even think about picking up cell phones and dialing them.
Now you're back. I lost your audio for a minute.
We've actually got... Some of the fixed users at work actually have USB phones, which are exactly like a normal phone, except they plug into the USB port.
Right. And does that interface with Lynx as well?
It's just the same sort of idea as a headset, I suppose.
Right, okay, it's just a handset.
Yeah, it's part of it. I mean, you could use it as a headset. I mean, if I'm using it at home, I use a headset, but... I haven't actually got a USB because we haven't completely rolled it out yet, but it's slowly replacing our telephone system at work as well.
So Lynx is clearly their business offering, and the strange thing is they already have had MSN Messenger, the Windows Live Messenger, so they've got their your regular folk on regular Windows PC service, and then they have their Xbox Live video chat already running through their Kinect devices. So it was weird to see Microsoft Ballmer go in and talk about with a chart about how they envision Skype being used for all those three things where Microsoft already has established products.
Just say that last bit again, Eric. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, I was saying, I was kind of just trying to fill time for you there, but I was just saying that the slide that Ballmer showed and discussed about Microsoft, about how they will use Skype, basically is redundant to products they already have in their Xbox, home, PC, and business offerings.
This is the point that I don't get, and this is where it really does confuse me, because they're talking about integration with Microsoft Office. Well, they can do that in a heartbeat. I mean, that's almost like a switch-like activity for Microsoft at the moment.
And in fact, you're right. I imagine that Microsoft Lynx is much more robust and is a better service. Mm. Probably anything Microsoft offers to enterprise is better than Skype's offering, because Skype was built to be free. It was built to be, it's peer-to-peer. It doesn't use a hosted server that a business hosts and controls and provides the bandwidth for and manages in all these different ways. And so I would expect that what we see is that Microsoft actually just rebrands their existing technologies to the Skype brand and probably doesn't actually turn those things that are already better into Skype's technology.
I mean, my thought is here that if you look at the Skype average Skype user, they would look at Microsoft purchasing this and see a negative in it. They would see that Microsoft is going to get the clammy mitts on it and absolutely finally drive it into the ground. If you're a Mac user, you're possibly thinking, well, actually, that means that's the end of Skype for me. I'm not going to get it because Ballmer will pull it in and put it behind a Microsoft ring fence. There's a thought process here that, you know, is this a life belt for Microsoft because they've got a declining market in terms of their OSs. They're making money, but they're not making as much as they used to. And this is just an opportunity to make more money. But the only thing that throws me away on that one is the fact that the money that they're spending to buy the damn thing is way, way, way disproportionate to the value of it, surely.
Absolutely. And I heard someone say that if they actually screw this one up, they will have engendered much more than $8.5 billion in in public outrage for having done this to all the Skype users and would really, really tarnish the already stale and sour Microsoft brand.
Mm.
Conversely, though, I think it does offer Microsoft a number of real opportunities in so many different spheres, be it the desktop area, be it the fact that, you know, my dad speaks to his mates in South Africa through Skype because it's a lot cheaper than international calls. Mm. There isn't a mobile phone now that doesn't have a version of Skype on it. And so Microsoft could sort of capture a huge number of different markets in different ways. And if they can sort of shoehorn it into the products which they're already selling, that's the real trick. How can they do the clever things that Skype have done already and with the users they've already got and make something useful out of it? And if they, as you say, if they completely squander it and don't come up with something new, and unfortunately, Microsoft aren't very good at coming up with really clever, innovative, brilliant ideas.
Right.
I mean, it might just be me.
Oh, still young, mate. I mean, Songsmith. I mean, there's a good point in that, isn't there? The other thought process maybe here is have they bought it to keep it out of the hands of Facebook? Because Facebook is talking about video integration and Skype-like integration into the
and
Facebook
And Facebook
market.
Has got no kind of comms at all apart from that crappy little messenger thing.
Yeah,
well, that could be the reason they have bought it, because Microsoft owns shares in Skype. So Microsoft owns shares in Facebook, sorry. And maybe they'll think, oh, we'll use our leverage of the stock we own in the company to perhaps then go in and integrate Skype with Facebook and then reap all the money from it.
Facebook a large amount of cash should do it, so.
Yeah.
the funny thing is, I think... I can think of three ways, and maybe by the time I start saying the first two, I'll have remembered the third. But I can think of, if they bought it because they genuinely wanted to get into this industry, they wanted to start doing a global communications platform like this to diversify their offerings away from just the core desktop software, like they've, for the same reasons that they got into the advertising business. And in fact, they mentioned in the press conference numerous times that ad sales, and particularly video ad sales, are something they're highly interested in doing with Skype, and had already approached Skype to make a deal with to provide for the Skype users. So if they really wanted to get into this and they just found this was an easy way, they would knock out this competitor and would not have to do extra deals with them and stuff to get those ads into there. That could be one good reason. If they thought that it was just to get the Skype brand because they thought their Microsoft brand is so tarnished and stale that people wouldn't like just a Microsoft branded thing like they haven't already for their existing Microsoft VoIP products, I think that's a bad idea. That's way too much to spend on merely a brand. And I don't remember the third thing, but I guess we were saying, okay, so that's what got me to say this.
At least you warned us.
Oh, what?
At least you warned us. Just going back to your first option, that sounds like making a sheep go moo. I mean, it really does. I mean, it's taking one thing and homogenizing it into something that it was never intended to be, and it's shoving a square peg in a round hole, and surely that ends up in ultimate disaster.
Well, if they keep their hands off Skype and just become a leech off of their profits, that, you know, they could at least save face and not destroy it. And they've pledged to let it be run pretty much autonomously. I mean, the Skype CEO is going to be called the head of Skype at Microsoft or something. And they keep pledging to uphold that Skype brand and do it on many, many platforms not owned by Microsoft to make that happen. Although I'm sure that Microsoft devices and Windows and Xbox and Windows Phone 7 will see special features that Mac users and Android users and PlayStation users will do without.
Well, therein lies a key point, surely. Because that is exactly the first point you're saying about, or the second point you're saying about brand. If you're buying just a brand, it's too expensive. But they're very keen to keep the brand separated. They're very keen to keep the brand in its own right. And can you think of another VoIP system which has got as much popularity as Skype that's out there on the market?
Not at this stage.
No.
There's nothing. And there's lots of people who tried. iChat is a turd.
Gizmo?
Gizmo, turd. Fring, turd. You look at
iChat is a turd for the same reason that Windows Live Messenger is. They just never went cross platform with it. Apple kept it to themselves, and I suspect that because of this, they'll start doing they'll open up FaceTime to be multi platform like they had originally said they were going to.
Yeah, well, Skype's not cross platform.
What do you mean?
Well, Skype. Skype's not cross platform.
It's supposed to be Mac and Linux. And Windows as well.
Well, no. It's,
yeah, I mean,
but iChat. If you're talking about iChat going across platform, the problem that you've got with all of the VoIP systems is not the platform and the OS that they run on. The problem is the fact that they don't integrate with each other in terms of cross platform.
Interoperability. Yeah.
There is no interoperability at all across any of the video chat markets.
Not quite
right,
true.
But if you only have a Mac version of something, then that's what I meant by cross platform. Yeah,
no, I know. I know what you mean.
Gizmo's SIP compatible.
So Gizmo will work on, it'll integrate with which other video platform?
Oh, video, no, it's only for voice. You can call, is that because there's no standard at the moment?
Exactly.
Is that something Microsoft might do?
This is the point I'm trying to say, is that there is nothing that's crop platform. They're all unique, they're all walled gardens, they're all in their own system. And there's nothing else like Skype that's got the integration and functionality and use across the whole of the video market. You know, if anyone was going to have a go at VoIP and get it right, you'd have put money on Google, but they haven't. You'd have said, right, Apple may be a bit small, but you know they at least could do a software that would work, and they haven't. There is nothing out there that functions. There is nothing out there that's captured the market. And when you've got a system whereby there is no cross-platform integration in terms of the video VoIP systems that are out there integrating, this is the biggest player. Microsoft have just walled it. It's all ours now. So we can fresh a standard. We can make things happen. We can dictate the pace because none of you have got anywhere near sufficient quantity of people to actually start to try and control and dictate this market.
To make a standard, you'd have to have they'd be spelling out specifications for how to build other software that connects into their ecosystem of users. They'd be giving away their, I don't know if that would be the source code or what, but I mean, they'd be telling people how to build competitive clients. And I don't see them doing that, especially not with the user base that they purchased. If they wanted to go to a open standard that everyone was told explicitly how to make into their own software, I think they would have just made it. They wouldn't have to buy the Skype name to do that, because then it just makes the Skype name useless. If anyone can make a Skype clone that it runs the exact same network in the exact same way. But I'm going to disagree with you, Ewan, that Google, you made it sound like that they failed at VoIP. I disagree. I think they're well on their way to becoming a strong Skype competitor. And I think that Apple, you said they failed as well. Their software is actually really good. FaceTime works really well. It just only works with Apple devices. And of course, that shoots them in the foot. But I think other companies can do it and probably will do it. And I think the interesting thing is, people have said, how does this all tie into Facebook? Facebook may have partnered with Skype. I don't think they ever needed to do that. I think Facebook is such a strong brand and has such a strong user lock-in that are just on the page. You know, they built their own chat client just right in there. They built their own messaging service. I mean, the codecs are out there. They can license a codec for nothing. They can get AAC, they can get H.264 or even better stuff than that, or Google's royalty-free one. And they have plenty of money to host it locally and serve it from a one location and make that super robust. They don't have to do the flaky peer-to-peer stuff that Skype started with, so it could be free and based on LimeWire technology, because it was the LimeWire people who wrote that. All Facebook would have to do, they've got the brand, they've got the users, the eyeballs are already there. They could just buy it off the shelf, throw it in there, and they've got a VoIP service and a video service. So I don't think anyone needs to partner with Facebook.
So which goes,
just simply haven't done it yet.
Which goes back to the very original point right at the start. Why would Microsoft buy Skype for $8.5 billion then?
I don't know.
That's the point. I'm trying to think of a reason why And that's the only, those are the only reasons I can think of, because the rest of this makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever.
The other thing that bothers me, you mentioned it, is that that Microsoft would acquire or partner with Skype and just leave them alone as their own brand. I don't think Microsoft ever done that before, as far as I remember. Anything that Microsoft ever has bought, it has become part of Microsoft technology, be it right the way from Kinect, right the way back.
Microsoft's just a kid with a spider. As soon as they've caught the spider, they want to pull the legs off.
It could happen. It could happen.
Oh, it's going to happen. Exactly. Terry, if you're waiting for us to stop so that you can talk, you're going to be sitting there drinking beer all night, mate. Don't.
It's all right. It's all right.
Just dive in, mate. Dive in. Right, Google I.O. Google I.O. conference was earlier in the week. Lots and lots of stuff happening. Anything that really struck anyone as being the big thing? I mean, is it the music service, or are we going to say that the Chromebook is the next big thing?
Chromebooks.
You think Chromebooks? I was being facetious.
You're kidding.
Yeah, no, go on. Tell me why Chromebooks is going to be the bigger thing over the music thing.
Well, because this... I almost said overnight. It's not overnight, but as soon as the software is there, meaning as soon as someone writes it or someone ports their existing desktop software to cloud compatible versions or just sets it up in a Citrix or VMware virtual machine, they have locked down the corporate, government, and education market of computers.
Yeah.
Sorry. I laughed only because of the amount of passwords that have gone missing recently. It just struck me. Hang on a minute. I don't know if I trust the cloud myself.
Okay, good point. But the Chromebook has—they've taken a very good step in that. If you're a student, you're going to get a subsidized version. The entry point for it is very, very low, and also already here in the UK, the Three Network signed an exclusive deal with them to provide all the data for it, and it's £25 a month, including the book itself. Which for a 2-year contract, which is pretty good. I mean, we're talking $40 there.
Mm-hmm. Is this going to take people away from tablets?
No, I don't think it's designed to compete with that. I think it's designed for spreadsheets, for any time that you have. They laid it out. You know, a lot of businesses have applications that are written just for them. You know, we're talking huge enterprises here, have custom software that's sitting there, requires Internet Explorer 6 and XP, you know, has all this crappy legacy crap it costs thousands and thousands of dollars per user per year for maintenance and IT support. And if it just went to a browser where it's impossible to infect with malware, and it was always booted up to the right thing, and people, you could trust them, they couldn't, you know, they could lock it down, they could block sites, they could do whatever they want, install whatever they want, very, very robust remote management of installations and adding and removing users, all that stuff is there, and the hardware refreshes naturally after 2 or 3 years. You just send it in, phone support is included for the end users. I think, you know, all this stuff, it just saves so much money that it's worth them just porting their application into the now more than capable Chrome browser.
Mm-hmm. That's going to screw like over a lot of IT.
It's like having a car on lease hire, isn't it? It's like every few years it's going to get replaced brand new. It's cheap to pay for, probably tax deductible to some sort of degree in education and business sector. And what they were saying with the prices of the monthly cost, it'd be silly not to. It'd be like the prices of all the, say if you're a student, the prices of all your books and all your stationery and stuff that you need, well, you don't need that anymore. You just get a Chromebook. Job done.
Yeah, I would say, you know, I would say it's not exactly like leasing a car, because with leasing a car, people often make the argument that it's cheaper to buy. But in this case, it would be as if leasing a car for all of your employees meant that you paid, you know, 20 times more over the life of the car than the person would pay to lease it for home use. But in fact, in this case, the cost savings for businesses is so substantial, and the cost, interestingly, that they're going to sell these things to consumers is so high. $500 for just a browser? Are you kidding? You can get a very well-equipped tablet or Windows PC for that price. I don't see any consumer doing this. I don't think they should. But I think businesses who already lock down their gear so much and prevent people from installing their own software, and it's just, you know, where you've got such a lockdown thing that people, they've got their personal laptop and they've got their business laptop, and it connects to their business's VPN, and it's all done, it throws to their firewall and everything, and it's got all this security software. It's got to be managed and custom written and managed by IT.
Or not.
What?
Or not. The computer that I was talking to you about earlier on with the system that the firm that I'm working with, I get on there once a month, maybe once every 2 weeks. And every time I need to get on there, I sit down with the phone because I know I'm going to be ringing tech support in the Philippines to find out how to get back on because it's bumped me because I haven't been on every single day. The passwords that it asked me for, it says I have to have a password. It has to be a minimum of 15 characters. I've got to have in it at least two numbers, at least one capital letter, and at least one other symbol. And I can't use the previous password that I've used for the previous 12 iterations. And the thing is, I'll type in the name of a guy who is my contact at the firm. So I type in his name, and then I put 01 exclamation mark, and that gets me in. The following month, I change the password to his name, 02 exclamation mark. It says, no, it's too close to the one previously. It's actually not even looking at the static characters of it being the next progress, exactly the same. It's working out that I've used a frequency of letters too much, and it's chucking me out because of that. And it is the most unusable, ludicrous computer system I've ever seen in my entire life. It is dysfunctional. It is security to the point of insanity.
So it sounds like, it sounds like you're arguing that the cost is not actually maintaining computers themselves, but just corporate incompetence at the IT level?
Yeah, corporate IT companies or corporate IT departments have got themselves to the stage now where they've locked the computers down so much that they can't be done without. And also, they know that they're getting attacks left, right, and centre, but they use those attacks as budget manipulation tools. They're not actually any greater threat than they were before. So, I mean, now the computer has gone from me having a password from a Control-Alt-Delete. I've now got a password which has a phenomenal number of characters that rotates and I can't repeat any of the functions within it. I've also got a BIOS login password before it even gets to the point where I can do Control-Alt-Delete. Then periodically, at least once every 3 months, I have to visit the company that give me the laptop and plug it into their home network at one of their static locations. Otherwise, it boots me out because it won't let me log in from a remote location more than 3 months at a time.
Are you a spy of some kind?
I feel like it, mate. I tell you what, I mean, I might as well have been Bin Laden because he's probably got more access to the frigging machine than I have.
That all sounds like a burden to you, though. I don't see where that's a cost for the company.
Because they're having to support me. Every time I can't get it, I've got to ring someone up. I've got to go to a company and I've got to sit down and plug it in. And it costs them a day's salary for me to go and plug it in. They pay me.
Well, wouldn't that be a lot easier if you were logging in to a web browser page, just as if you were logging into Facebook or your bank?
Well, what you're talking about now is something like the SharePoint kind of process that you've got with Microsoft. Fantastic process. Really, really good. Love it to pieces. Wonderful storage. Very good ease of access. Goes across all browsers. And I think it's absolutely brilliant. But the next question has got to be, are companies going to go to something which is cloud-based and still feel secure? And what I'm seeing in the company that I'm working with, no, they won't. No one's going to buy this anyway because of the fact they don't see it as control. They don't see security as the high end of it.
Here's what I think is going to happen. I think that feeling will wear off very quickly, and I think they will very quickly get over their fears of any of this stuff. What's going to happen, I predict, is Google is going to launch some very, very successful and very high-profile pilot programs with some big businesses out there, some major, major global enterprises, and they're going to give them all this stuff for free. They've already done it they showed a slide of like, I don't know, 20 companies with whom they've already done this. But I think they're going to get into more government offices. They're going to get into larger businesses. And what happens is then you get to the level where you've got the CEOs, you've got the top brass who don't understand how things work technically saying, look at what that company is spending on their IT. It is 10% of what we are. And look at how cool their software is and how little they have to do and how modern it is. Even if they don't realize that the modernity came from the fact that they had to rewrite their software from scratch to work with that stuff, it'll prompt them to say, I want that. They'll be jealous. They'll say, I want to be efficient like that. And I want the new cool thing, much in the same way that companies have adopted the iPad just because the CEOs thought it was cool to play with at home.
This is what concerns me, I'm afraid, is the fact that IT, all right, so a number of IT departments have been outsourced already. and you get these massive corporations supplying chunks of IT service to call centers and service desks around the country and the world. But I think it's going to ruin IT for a number of companies, especially the strategic stuff. Everything is going to be developed for the. It worries me. It just worries me that the business decisions are being made because of something cool, as you say, cool and shiny, the next big thing.
I don't think
without
there will
the
be.
Kind of the knowledge that actually, I mean, IT engineers, I'm well aware, they're bogs and boilers guys to most of the company. But quite a lot of critical business decisions go through the IT department to get sense checked.
Yeah.
And I think this takes it a step back from that. That really worries me.
I think the problem that you've got is that the IT department is too keen on keeping itself in a job. And you will get...
Well, we'll see, I think.
You will get them, the chief executive, coming to them saying all the things that you've just said, Eric, about, well, it's glossy, it's shiny, it looks cool, why can't we do this? And there'll be a boogeyman story that probably will be complete bull. But... chief exec's not going to go against the IT guy because the chief exec's actually qualified as an accountant. He's not qualified as an IT support.
Mm.
Well, when the people they're trusting is not the IT guy, but in fact, Google Incorporated, I think
they'll be even worse.
No, I mean, I think they'll say they trust Google. It's going to take some shining examples out there. Some pilot programs that are just irresistible that Google will work very closely with. I think that's what's going to happen.
Terry, you got a view on this?
I think it's going to be really successful. I think it's really funny that they launched this when they're talking about their apps, their web apps, as an advert for it. They launched it, and it doesn't actually work with Chrome. It works with Safari, with Flash. When you're talking about Angry Birds, they launched Angry Birds into their app store, and it was like, and I was sitting there with my friend trying to get it to work. Nope. Go on Safari with Flash. We got the Angry Birds to work. So not a very good advert for it to begin with there, but I think it's going to be massive. I think it'll probably damage Microsoft in a big way.
Wow. I could see that Microsoft are going to lose out if it does take off. I just think at the corporate level, it's not going to take off, and it's too overpriced at the domestic level, as you say, Eric.
Do you think Google Docs is ready for it?
Ooh. There's a question.
It'll rapidly get there.
Really?
Well, remember, people. I've seen other people make this mistake too, though. There is no requirement to use Google Docs or any Google service on a Chromebook.
So what do you use instead?
Well, truthfully, the competitors aren't there yet, but I absolutely believe they will be.
I mean, you could use
OpenOffice for web.
I mean, we use iEtherpad for sharing stories, etc., very much like Google Docs. So that would obviously work because it just runs in a browser. So all your browser-based word processors are going to work out of the box? Yes, no?
I imagine so. And image editing tools, you can get that, audio editing tools, even video. There are some web-based video editing tools, aren't there, I think?
Adobe Online system is brilliant. I mean, it's extremely good for editing. But, how much storage are you talking on this thing? And if you start manipulating files on the computer, then people are going to start looking for offline functionality with it.
Mm.
And that's where it just falls flat on its face. You know, you've got no web connection, you're screwed.
Do you remember how around the turn of the century, everyone was saying that Linux was going to overtake every Windows desktop, and who would pay for a Windows license and maintain Windows software if they could get Linux totally for free? And then it didn't happen for most users because Linux was hard to use and very little software was written for it specifically. Well, if the platform is meaningless because it just works on the browser, and if the in-browser performance is just as fast and cross-platform, like we've seen with their demonstrations, even that are very GPU heavy, the performance is great, or else you do most of the processing on the cloud side, on the server side, then. And if all you've got to manage is a web browser that is impenetrable to malware and can magically rebuild itself if something does get in, that's the end of the game right there. The browser has grown up so much in part because of Google's commitment to improving JavaScript rendering and closing up those bottlenecks. There's no reason not to do it anymore.
And what do you do if you can't get online?
Yeah, well, a couple of things. I think, first of all, this will matter the most in places where people are already tied to corporate networks where their files are stored. A lot of people don't get to store their stuff at home or locally at all. They, you know, they always, even if they're away from the office, they still have to tie in remotely to get to anything. So that is where this will at first be the most attractive. Second of all, a lot of the applications, again, because of innovations in the Chrome browser, can run perfectly fine offline. Gmail now does it. Angry Birds does it. Google Docs, I think, whatever the other one that they mentioned was. And they showed people how easy it is to write into your web apps to make a perfectly cached local version. The one thing that they didn't say, and I'm really curious about, is whether browser programs can access and write and use local storage. It kind of looks like they couldn't. If it did, what I thought was, why would you even, you know, video editors, you know, people who use Avid, why wouldn't they just run a, you know, in the web browser, the full featured video editing software? Well, that wouldn't work if your you know, 80 gigabyte files were in the cloud. But if they were local, could the web browser access them and use them locally? It looks like they have not allowed that.
I think HTML5 can grant access to local storage, can't it? You can set aside a certain amount of space associated with a particular web application. Although I think that becomes its own sphere. It's not connectable to anything else.
It certainly can, but it looks to me like Google has disallowed that. They've locked it down so that in order to work with any local files, the files first have to be uploaded rather than have the app directly access and especially have write access to something local.
So that could cause problems with speed. If you haven't got a quick connection one way or the other, yeah, it does rely on a good symmetrical connection.
Or not a connection at all.
Or not a connection at all.
I mean, I go a lot of places where I don't use my laptop because of the fact I can't get a connection, you know, I do use my laptop, but I can't get a connection or I have to pay through the nose for it, you know, in an airport or something like that. I'm going to get £15 an hour for a connection. You can stick that one right where the sun don't shine. If I've got a Google Chrome network with me, if I've got local storage, hang on a second, bugger off whoever that is.
Everyone's
gone off and come. Hey, hello, Terry. You're back.
I'm going to do it too. I'm going to hang up and I'm going to call you back.
No, he's gone. If you look at if you have local storage, you have to have offline manipulation. That's it.
True.
There's no way around that. Otherwise, what you've got is a terminal. And someone in the chat room saying, you know, it's a terminal. No, it's not a dumb terminal. Well, okay, if you're saying it's not a dumb terminal, it's got to have offline manipulation. And if it hasn't got offline manipulation, you're really going to pay $500 for something that you can't use unless you're connected. We're in an area where now, I mean, you look at Three Network, they've taken this thing on and they've used it in the UK. They sold me a dongle a year ago. And I've started using it, and it's fantastic. I was getting nearly 5 megabits a second out of it, up to 7.2 on the HSDPA system. But...
Well, that's why I keep saying that this is
going to be
I'm
getting 2.2. But currently, I'm getting 2.2, and I've never got better than 2.2 in recent months because of the fact the system's overloaded. They haven't put money in for the infrastructure, and it's not growing.
It's all flooded, right.
Well, not every business can switch to this right away. In fact, probably very few can. It has to be a place that has enough local bandwidth and has all these other things that would make this work. But I absolutely think that in 5 years, in 10 years, this is where things will be. In 10 years, I don't think there will be such a thing as being in a place with no internet connection, with no 3G or 4G. And I don't think any of these issues we've talked about, you know, Google Docs isn't as robust as Microsoft Office yet. By the time that enough people have the bandwidth access and can do this, it won't matter. It'll already be done.
I'm not disagreeing with you. In 10 years' time, you know, we could have a man on Mars drinking a latte, but...
Or 3 years.
Exactly.
Well, I think that's the point. With all you've said, Eric, I think Google have done it again. They've come up with a brilliant idea, but either done it the wrong time or the wrong way.
Yeah.
No, they can make it happen. I mean, I agree that the biggest problem that any of these companies face, including Microsoft, including Apple, we're going to see an ever increasing clash with the telco providers who are restricting the bandwidth. We're going to see continued efforts of Google to expand their gigabit fiber network. They're going to put peer pressure as well as financial pressure on the other people to build this stuff out. And once they have the networks that are as robust as they need them to be, it'll be over. And I think why this is I don't think it's the wrong time. I think if you're in a, if you're in like New York City, if you're in an area that has very fast broadband or one of the pilot plates, if you're in Chattanooga, Tennessee, where they already have a gigabit, you're living in the future. This is over and done. It's a done deal. So it'll just be a matter of time before this is viable for everybody.
Is that, that scares me a little bit, the fact that it could just be a Google network as well. They have everything. Every, you know, soup to, what do you call it, soup to nuts.
Oh, Google. Certainly. I don't want Google to be my ISP for those reasons, but I would take them over Comcast.
I think, I mean, this is where it ties back to the Ofcom issue here this week. You know, Ofcom have been sitting talking about the 4G. I mean, how long has 4G LTE been coming? And how far is it implemented thus far? You know, it's not. It's really poor. It won't be out running properly for a very long time. The networks have then got to upgrade all the infrastructure to carry it all. Then there's going to be the data load, and then everyone will go massively for it, and there'll be a big black hole of data consumption yet again. And you may have this fantastic laptop. You may have always-on internet access, but you'll sit there and you'll have 1 megabit a second at best, or 0.07 up or down. Like you currently get, you know, you sit down in an airport or you sit down in a hotel. Sarah's a prime example tonight. You know, Skype hasn't dropped out. It's the connection that she's got in the hotel. And I bet you she's probably paid $20 for that for the night. Mm. It's cost her a lot of money.
That's, but if you think about it, that's on the, we're, that, that, and I agree, that still is much more common than a robust and cheap connection at a hotel, for instance, or in public. But we're looking at the tail end of that. I mean, we're at the very end of the, of, you know, the 1 megabit 802.11b, the, like, for instance, wherever Sarah is, that service has probably been there for, like, installed for probably about 5 years. And so as soon as it gets upgraded, and you'll start to see competitive pressure for hotels and airports and everywhere to update to this, the business customers, you know, the high end business customers who pay the most for things and buy those business class seats will demand it. If their company requires, they do, they use their cloud software and do their video conferencing, as the social norms force them to do it, it absolutely will be done.
I have a funny feeling, though, that it's that case where nobody's prepared to quite make that first move yet. Everyone's just holding back, going, whoa, wait, let's wait, let's see who moves first. And I think it could be another couple of years before anybody takes that big step and says, right, let's do it, let's give people what they want.
Because, well, that's why I say Google is going to bankroll the first few companies. They will make examples out of some major companies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think the telcos are going to be the real nail in the coffin of this, because I don't think Google have got a lot of money and they can push the market and sustain it. But I think they're not going to be able to maybe sustain it long enough for the telcos to catch up with the data demand on it. And that's ultimately where it will fail.
Well, when you say telcos, you mean the mobile cellular cellular companies?
Yeah.
Because it's interesting how, going right back to the beginning of the whole show, Skype has had relationships with those telcos and actually managed to negotiate some amazing deals of what they've been able to provide, because it's voice, it's quite straightforward. And I wonder if that could be, it's possible for other companies to get, you know, to make those relationships in the same way as they had, or maybe Microsoft could.
Well, that's the point. You've just been saying it's just voice. Well, no, it's not just voice. You're talking about a huge CPU with the ability to manipulate and crunch and send data left, right and center. Not just emails anymore. You know, this isn't Twitter. It's not 140 characters. It's not, you know, 10 gigabits a second is going to be fine. Thank you very much. This is
people are going to get this. Every 6 months, they get more and more powerful. Yeah, absolutely.
People are going to get this. They're going to want to shove HD video up to YouTube, because don't forget, absolutely, Google own YouTube. So this is going to have heavy integration with YouTube. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's why I think even if Google ends up dragging the existing telcos kicking and screaming into the high bandwidth future, I think it absolutely will happen. And I think the first companies to be really successful with this will be bankrolled by Google. They'll give them all the hardware like they've already done with the CR48 notebooks at the first program. And they will also build out fiber connections, and they'll make sure that it's in an area where some areas, like, I don't know, was it Houston or somewhere in Texas? You know, you get these random spots with just gobs and gobs of, like, you know, you got 12 high-speed internet providers, and it's like, what? I've got one, you know? Mm-hmm. So all it takes is an area that is already in the future like that, like Chattanooga, for instance, that has gigabit, and it's already there, right? The software for the, you know, write the web page. Google hosts it on their code. They've got their Amazon S3 equivalent. Launch it with that, and you're done.
Good point. good conversation, chaps. We always have a good conversation on a Friday. The beer's flown, that's the key part, eh? Cool thingies. James, have you got any cool thingies for us?
Well, I was listening to I was listening to some of the shows over the course of the week, and I was listening to poor old Kyle and the temperatures at 5 o'clock in the morning being 90 degrees in the shade, and I was thinking to myself, do you know, it must be possible to create a solar in the places where it is hot, it's hot because it's sunny. Surely it's possible to create a solar powered air conditioner. And you can have your own solar powered air conditioner for a mere $10,500. SolarAC.com. Up to $23,800.
Is that your cool thing? Because if it is, it's easily the most expensive one we've ever had.
Well, but the thing is, it's actually still pretty useless because I think it's just solar assisted rather than solar powered. We're still not quite there yet.
And that's your cool thingy?
That's my cool thingy.
A solar powered air conditioner.
Solar powered air conditioner.
Put a link in the chat room for us because I think there's going to be a lot of people asking for that. Mostly to send them hate mail or DDoS attacks, but.
Absolutely.
Now, Terry, we've jumped this on you a little bit, so if you haven't got anything, we can come back.
I was just frantically having a right, little we'll look around the internet.
We'll come back to you, mate. Eric, what's your cool thingy? Let me guess, another book.
No, but I will throw you for another one. My cool thingy is the Google Music beta, and you can sign up to be to get an invitation. It's invitation only, slowly rolling out. Sign up at music.google.com. 20,000 songs free.
Unless you're British.
Storage space.
Unless you're British. Don't come on a British pod.
Oh, that's right. It's just in the US.
Don't come in here and showing your Netflix pants because it's no use to us. Don't come in here showing your Google Music pants because they're no good to us.
Well, you've got Spotify, so we're even.
Well, yeah, but it's only some of us, because they're still limiting the accounts on it, so. No, all right, Google Music is your pick. Well done, pal. My pick is dead simple. It's an audiobook, and this week I've done a bit more driving than I normally do, and I've got back into my audiobooks, and I downloaded I forgot the name of the frigging book now. Bad Ideas. There we go. Bad Ideas book. It's by Robert Winston, who's the guy, he's an in vitro fertilization guy over here in the UK, and he's done a fantastic program on the human body all over the place. But he's written a book about bad ideas and why we have them. And it's a history of bad ideas. So he goes back right the way back to cavemen and how we started manipulating tools and that kind of stuff. And I'm just working through it, and I'm up to the section where agriculture is getting a real good kicking off him. And after the invention of wheat and domesticated animals and products, people's teeth started falling out in the skeletons that we found, which they didn't do before. And it's really, really interesting. The History of Bad Ideas, that's it. Robert Winston. Awesome, awesome listen on audiobook.
Does he read it himself?
He does, he reads it himself.
He's got a fantastic voice. Grumpy bugger, but a fantastic voice.
Well, I got to say, actually, now I'm not going to publish this bit, but he sounds like he's pissed. Unfortunately, when he's reading it, he's got a bit of a slur on. So whether he's had a bit of an episode or something, or whether he has taken a fancy to that, because I think he does like the red wine, a bit too much red wine, and got a bit of an Alex Ferguson nose on him. I'm not entirely sure, but he does sound like he's pished. There we go, Terry. I'll
right, yes, that bit out there. I've got one thing to talk about. Is anybody here a fan of GTD or Getting Things Done?
Mm-hmm. Go on.
The philosophy of getting things done. Well, a guy called Patrick Rowan, who has a
the philosophy's as far as I ever go, mate.
He has a website called minimalmac.com. You guys might know about that. He's just written a book called Keeping It Straight, whereby he offers a lot of advice and short stories to people, which sort of just help you sort of meditate your workflow as such. And I've been reading it and taking a lot of great advice from the book, and it's pretty cheap. Well worth the money. So that's a decent book right there. If you go to keepingitstraightbook.com, I believe, then you can check out the book there.
Now, is it really practical and doable advice, and can you follow it through? Because one of the things that my wife always said to me was that on the top of my headstone, she's going to have life, the only thing that you and Rankin ever finished.
A lot of the time with...
But she's true, but...
A lot of the time with that sort of advice, sometimes I've been like, oh, that is just nonsense, absolute nonsense.
But yeah.
Instead of like just telling you how to do stuff, it's like this book offers you just sort of practical advice where you can apply it in many different areas of your life. It doesn't have to be with your workflow. It could just be with spending more time with your family and friends. It's that sort of vibe going on. It makes you think a lot more about what you're doing and how you're doing it, as instead of just being outward productive all the time, which is why I like it.
Brilliant. Good choice, mate. Thank you. I'll look that out. Go on, Eric.
Before you go to the sponsor, could I amend my, could I add an addendum to my cool thingy?
Go on then.
Okay. I totally forgot. I do have something that's pretty cool. If you're interested in the Google stuff that we've been talking about and the announcements from I/O and trying to figure out where they're going with a lot of these technologies and what they have in mind, they've posted a huge number of their sessions onto YouTube from this week's conference. And it's a username Google Developers, I believe. But if you just search for Google I/O 2011, you'll come across them. Mm-hmm. And I've got so many here, most of it's over my head because I'm not a software developer, but I intend to take a look at some of these. I downloaded like 20 gigabytes worth of them so far, 720p, because, screw Comcast, right? And we've got Google OnePass explaining what that is for paywalls, an introduction to Google TV, building Android apps for Google TV. I'm wondering what in the world will Android apps on a TV look like? So I'm going to check out that one to hopefully get an idea. There's some really interesting stuff here, as well as the keynotes.
Very, very good. Excellent. Good choice.
And of course,
I was going to have an addendum to my cool thingy, which is a book called How to Build Your Own Solar Powered Air Conditioner, but I couldn't find one.
I want the ISBN number for that. Our last word goes to, not them, our sponsors. Here we go, UK2.net. They are the people that host us. We've been with them for nearly 2 years now, and they pick up all of the bandwidth that we've got. We've grown massively in the last sort of 6 months. We consumed 3 terabytes of data in audio only off the servers last month. They've added an extra 10 nodes to the server this week to deal with the demand that we've currently got. I don't want to say each week that sounds different, but they're just bloody marvellous. They look after us and we look after them, I hope. The deal with us is that you support us, and if you want to keep Bagel Tech on the air, the amount of bandwidth we're using, there's no way on God's earth that we'll be able to host it anywhere else and it not cost us an absolute fortune. UK2 pick it up free of charge. They also sponsor us and give us support. And we'd like you to give them support in return, if you would, please. Whatever you're doing, stop what it is now and go and click the UK2.net logo on our webpage. Go to bageltechnews.com, then scroll all the way to the bottom and you'll find a logo there. Click on that and it'll take you through to the UK2.net homepage. And then even if you just want to sign into your account, go ahead and do it. At the moment, you've got domain names on there for £1.79, and if you buy a domain name, they'll enter you into a draw for an iPad 2. Co-location services, if you're getting a bit stuffed in your own servers and you want to add up and spread across to them, you buy that service, they're going to give you a month free of charge if you use the Bagel Tech code when you purchase it as a coupon code, and you'll automatically get an iPad 2 anyway. No draw, you just get an iPad 2. And if you go for the VPS servers and you use the offer code BagelTech, you'll get your first month free of charge there. And Steve, one of the Mac listeners, has done that this week. He's bought himself a VPS server. Very, very happy. And they're great tech support as well, so you can't really ask for an awful lot more. And if you're not getting good tech support, let me know, and I raise it up through them, and they escalate it, and it gets sorted, which happened this week. You know, someone couldn't get something solved. We've got it solved for them. They're a good bunch. They're a real nice bunch, and they really look after us. Please support them. UK2.net. We would be lost without them thoroughly. Where can we get a hold of you, please, guys?
Me. Start with me.
Go for it, James.
Oh, start with me. You're well, because I'm at the top left-hand corner.
I'm sorry, but I was doing two things at once there, and I'm not built for multitasking.
About.me/James Hart or at Syzygy, S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y on Twitter.
Now, have you recently renewed your .me account?
About.me?
Yeah.
That's a free account, the About.me, I think.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's one of these sort of front page things to the... I think it's quite a good idea. It's like a giant business card.
Because the I've just had my renewal through for my .me account with Apple.
Oh, it's not... About.me is not Apple.
Oh, it's not?
No, it's just about.me, and there's no, it's not me.com.
I'll have to edit that bit out then. I didn't know that. There we go. So we'll leave that one alone then. Terry, where can we get hold of you, mate?
You can find me at terrylucy.com, or you can find me on Twitter at terrylucy.
Right, and you're teaming up with Mike, who came on the Mac Show a few weeks back, and you've got your own podcast. So what's the podcast about?
The podcast is it's an Apple-centric sort of tech talk show. Not too dissimilar to this one, apart from we're not as intelligent as the conversation that goes on this show. But that's thebroshow.co.uk.
Yes. Broshow.co.uk. Brilliant, mate. Excellent. And finally, Eric, where can we get you?
I thought you were going to say Sarah. I guess she's not on there anymore, or else she's turned into the Apple software update.
No, I was going to do it at the end, but I'll do it now then. Sarah's available at SarahJaneUK on Twitter. And you can get her at sarahjaneuk.com, which is her home webpage. And it might be .co.uk. So if you go to the wrong place, then have a look again.
So, of course, you can find me at ericlanigan.com and twitter.com/ericlanigan and youtube.com/ericlanigan. ericlanigan. The latest Tech Talk Back is posted. Just did that about an hour ago before this show. And if you haven't heard enough banter about what Skype is going to become, then I've got an hour and a half for you to enjoy.
Woo. Hey. Now, listen, mate, do you want me to wipe that smile off your face?
Go ahead.
I wrote a review this week where I compared Boinks with Wirecast, and I thought Wirecast was better, and I said so. There you go. I got an email from them. They've given us a copy of Wirecast to use on the Skype wall, so we're going to give them a bit of sponsorship for that to say thank you very much. And they've also given us 5 copies to give away. So we've got 5.
God damn it.
We've got
tell them all these people that I know are getting Wirecast free. Someone please tell them, give me back my $500.
Sucker. Next month, June, July, August, September, October, they are sponsoring a little giveaway. There'll be a competition. I'm not sure what the competition is going to be, whether it's going to be a question or you just send an email in, or whether you've got to think of some witty.
Make Eric cry.
.com. You're going to get the chance to win a free copy of Wirecast. It's $500 worth of software. So you can't.
Indeed
really
it is. Indeed it is.
Are you sure it's 500, Eric? No. Are you sure it's 500?
Yeah.
The other good news is, because of course, you don't want to be tied down on your platform. They do it for Mac and for Windows, and you can use the offer code or the promotional code that we get for it on either Windows or Mac. So don't think for one second that you're tied into one or other platform. It's anyone else you like. So enter the competition next month, and you too can win. And I'm just saying, spread the word until we start the competition, but they're not going to, are they? That was a stupid thing to think. You don't want more people in a draw. No, we might do it as like a, you'll have to say something funny. We'll have to come up with a phrase and you've got to finish it or something like that. There you go. Boinks is better than Wirecast because .. which is not. By the way, Boinks is selling Boinks Home in the Mac App Store for £5.99 at the moment, and it's not a mistake. I checked out today, and Don McAllister corrected me. It's the genuine price. So if you go and buy it there, they're doing a promotion on that and all of the photo editing stuff and iStop Motion, which I paid £45 for last month. Booker. But it's. I mean, for £5.99, even if you've got a reasonably low-powered machine, you might do okay with it, so just go and buy it. If you've got a high-end stuff, brilliant. Can't beat it. Instead of £599. Right, we'll see you again next week for the Bagel Tech Big Show back here at 10 o'clock. We've got the Andy Anatko's coming on the Mac Show with us next time as well, so he'll be here next Friday, and the photo show's at 11. Bagel Tech News is going to go to Monday, Wednesday and Friday from now on through the summer, because we've got the downturn in news, and it's probably going to stop through August completely, because there's never enough news to get us on with, and at the moment it's so dry and so barren that I really couldn't think of anything to say on Thursday anyway, so it was a good job I didn't do it. So Monday, Wednesday and Friday next week we'll have a Bagel Tech bit of news, and that's it. So don't look for one on Tuesday and Thursday. Hope you have a great weekend. Thanks for coming along. Thanks, chat room, for staying and listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye.